Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth, he has a front row seat to the efforts here to staff up the second Trump administration. We have some more critical appointments that the president-elect has made. Scott, good to have you here.
It's great to be back, Loman.
It appears that President-elect Trump has made an historic pick to be his White House press secretary, the person who's going to be the face of the second Trump administration. Want to give us a little bit of background on that?
Yeah, well, recently President Trump announced that he was going to name Caroline Leavitt to serve as the White House press secretary. She will be the youngest press secretary that we've had at the White House, and it's an exciting thing for her. She also previously served in the first term as an assistant press secretary underneath Kayleigh McEnany. Caroline has been working with the Trump campaign as their national press secretary, and she's just a natural fit to slide right over there into the Brady room and, you know, work with the White House press corps every day. President Trump also kind of revealed in that announcement that she will be more taking more of an active role at the podium and engaging, delivering the message to the American people. You know, not all of his press secretaries have really welcomed that or thrived in that situation. So I think this will be a lot of fun to see Caroline take the reins and really, you know, be the lead spokesperson for the Trump administration.
President-elect Trump here, Scott, appears to be filling up his cabinet and main positions in the new government much more rapidly than what he did 8 years ago, or much more rapidly than is normal. A whole raft of additional appointments have been rolled out since we had you on the show last week. What other key posts have now been filled?
First, speaking to your point in terms of the organization and the way that the Trump team has been announcing these nominees to really important cabinet positions or other agency heads. Susie Wiles, you know, he named her to be the chief of staff. She'd been running the campaign and really managing the Trump operation for the last 4 years. And her strategy has been to sort of trickle out a few different nominees and keep that momentum and the excitement of the new Trump administration buzzing. So this week, we saw a bunch of new nominees announced, and one was Sean Duffy, former congressman from Wisconsin. He's going to be the Secretary of Transportation. We also had Howard Lutnick, who was the CEO at Cantor Fitzgerald. You guys might remember that he lost, I think, about 600 employees when the World Trade Center was, the terrorist attack there on 9/11. And he's going to be our Secretary of Commerce. Linda McMahon, the former CEO at WWE, along with Vince McMahon, she served in the first Trump cabinet as administrator of the Small Business Administration, and he has nominated her to be Secretary of Education. I think that's a really important nominee because school freedom and parents' rights has just been a huge election issue since the era of COVID, and we're really excited for Mrs. McMahon to serve as the secretary there. We also had Doug Collins named nominee for Secretary of Veteran Affairs. Doug Burgum over the weekend was nominated to be Secretary of Interior. Chris Wright, Secretary of Energy. Just a lot of really big names that are coming in. Another holdover from the first Trump administration, he served as Acting Attorney General Matthew Whitaker. Trump's nominating him to be United States Ambassador to NATO. And that's going to be a really, really important position, somebody that will totally have the trust of Donald Trump to help navigate this really difficult situation between Ukraine and Russia. The Biden administration gave the Ukrainians permission to, you know, launch missiles into the Russian mainland. And, you know, Russia responded this week with an ICBM being launched right back at the Ukrainians. And the big part about that, Loman, is that ICBMs can carry nuclear warheads. Obviously, that one did not, but I think it was a real signal from the Russians that they're not happy about what the Biden administration has done in terms of giving that permission to the Ukrainians. So Whitaker being the ambassador to NATO is going to be a really, really important position that I think is kind of flying underneath the radar right now. But we need to be mindful of his role in the administration.
Scott, a number of these appointments have to go before the United States Senate for confirmation. Republicans, of course, will have 53 seats. However, we have a a couple of members of the Republican Conference who are essentially rhinos who may or may not go along with these appointees. Are there tactics that the Trump administration can be used to ensure that the president's picks actually get to serve?
This is a big controversy right now in Washington, D.C., because Trump has called on the Senate and the House to have an adjournment and schedule a recess so that he can make recess appointments. And recess appointments, there's a lot of precedent for them. You know, in the past, you basically have had presidents like Clinton and W. Bush and even Obama using recess appointments to a large scale in order to get nominees quickly into positions of decision-making. And the difference between a recess appointee and a nominee that gets confirmed by the Senate is that a nominee confirmed by the Senate would serve indefinitely at the pleasure of the president with no maximum time, you know, extended through the term of the president. However, a recess appointee can only serve the rest of the calendar year and then the subsequent year. So they are limited in terms of how long they can remain in the position without a full Senate confirmation. There's been a Supreme Court case from 2014 because Barack Obama tried to do recess appointments in between what are known as pro forma sessions of Congress. And pro forma sessions come in every 3 days so that there isn't a recess and that you can prevent these things. And ultimately, what the court said was that you needed to have about 10 days as a minimum of recess in order for a recess appointee to go forward. Now, there are a lot of people that are concerned that he's sidestepping the advice and consent role of the United States Senate. All these nominees are still going to have hearings, and the Senate's advice and consent won't be infringed upon. The big question is, what do you do when somebody is rejected by the Senate, and do you have the authority to still put them into place? Well, you might remember in the Bush administration, John Bolton was nominated to be UN ambassador, and the Senate rejected his nomination. And what came next was a recess appointment by President Bush to get him into that position. So there's a lot of precedent here for cabinet roles and for other nominations to be confirmed either through the United States Senate or recess appointments. But it's going to be controversial because I think some of these nominees don't have the full support right now of the United States Senate. And it'll be interesting to see how the Senate adjudicates the question in the early months of the Trump administration.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, tell us a little bit about the club.
Club for Growth is located in Washington, D.C. We're united in this idea of economic freedom and liberty and opportunity. We have over 500,000 members. You can sign up and become a member for free at clubforgrowth.org.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, we'll chat with you next week. Thank you.
You are welcome.